Let's all please return to our seats so that we can resume our meeting. Thank you. Oh, Sebastian Bachelet said that half the people in ICANN are lawyers? No, not at all. I was thinking of telling him to take down the slides and get out of here. That was my...
You would have gotten a standing ovation.
Yeah. Please return to your seats. We'll be returning, we'll be resuming in 1 minute, whether you're standing or not. Thank you. Elisa Cooper's very good at that, I know. She'll just start on time no matter what people are doing. It's a certain approach.
You're going to do that in about 45 seconds?
Yes. Yes, I will. As soon as that four there. We are now resuming the open meeting of the Intellectual Property Constituency at ICANN 52 in Singapore. The next item on our agenda, discussion of staff dialogues and next steps. As a reminder, we had three staff presentations from compliance, from the five-year operating plan team, and from Karen Lentz. In addition, we have one or two additions to the agenda. Shari Falco from ICM Registry has graciously agreed to give us a few minutes of her time, and in return we'll give her a few minutes of ours. We'll have a presentation from her. We've had some discussion on the list, but might as well, since we're all here, take care of that as well. Also, if Ellen Shankman is still in the room or will be returning to the room, can give us a brief update on NOMCOM activities. So let's open the floor with a discussion. Let's actually begin with Xavier and his presentation, just to get that out of the way. Open the floor to any comments on that. Steve?
Yeah, the only thing I would say is I did look at that summary of the public comments was posted on Saturday, and it does have answers to some of our questions, and I don't really understand some of the answers, but I will put together I'll do a cut and paste of what we asked and what they answered. It's some of it is kind of opaque, but I'll take that on. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Anybody else have anything to say for the record? Off the record, we can take care of at another time. Nothing on the record about that. In any case, thank you, Steve, for taking that on. I think it's important we keep rolling on that. I see in the rear of the room Jonathan Zuck. Either use the microphone or the Zuckophone.
It's not always the fault of staff that they become a freight train. But I mean, at some point, us grousing about it on our listserv and things like that isn't necessarily going to bring about a result. So I guess I'm wondering what we've already vented, right? What should we do about it is my question.
Well, I think two things. One is to take, you know, Steve's input and give a put that on the list and have a directed response, you know, going back to Carol and Xavier and the rest of their team, you know, with regard to the questions, to try to have a dialogue and a meeting. If we do, I don't know that we have any time to meet with them while we're here, and that may be very difficult to coordinate. So I'm not, frankly, going to push that. I think the second thing is feedback more generally on the uselessness of useless presentations, which we need to feed back to in terms of ex post comments on this Singapore meeting. And I think this actually fits into some of the things I've heard a number of discussions of how to avoid repetitive, mind-numbing presentations, which aren't good neither for the presenter or the audience. Any other thoughts on that? Steve?
Jonathan, this is Steve Metallitz. Were you referring to, particularly to the points you made about the KPIs and that they were going to redo them and that type of thing?
I guess I wasn't. I guess I was talking about the timeline that said that we've now summarized comments and the next step is we're going to submit to the board. And we got a little bit of a concession that maybe there needed to be another step added. I guess I'm just wondering what it is we need to do to help push that across the finish line towards, you know, making that bump in the road actually happen, right?
Well,
I mean,
we're
good at filing comments and things like that. I mean, but should we coordinate, as I said, something in the public forum with the board? Should we submit a letter to Fadi? I mean, I guess, is there some way to escalate this beyond just talking about it potentially? Because otherwise, this will just go through.
Yeah, I think you both your suggestions are good. One option would be to get up in the public forum, although I don't know how they're going to choose the topics for the public forum, but I suppose this may be one of them. But the other would be we could send a letter to maybe to Bruce and Marcus as the as kind of our people on the board, or to the board as a whole, and just say during the presentation we raised some issues and it seemed clear that more work was needed, so we would encourage you not to put this on the board agenda for action until those things happen. And maybe, if you want to draft, I'll just suggest maybe if you want to draft that, maybe that's a good way to proceed.
Thanks, John. Anybody else on Xavier's presentation? Let's move on then to talk about compliance. Any thoughts on the compliance discussion, any next steps we might want to take with regard to what we heard from Alan and Maggie? I, for one, certainly want to know more about the consumer safeguards. It always sounds promising, but yet there's nobody in the seat and, typically, not seeing too much in the way of proactive measures, and I think that's really important. And I think that I have also heard in more casual conversation that there's, pressure from contracted parties, not necessarily in an organized fashion, but certainly from some, against more proactive compliance. So, we are, once again trying to introduce a greater amount of integrity into the process and that may keep people from making as much money as they would like. But there's an issue there. I think we need to keep putting on pressure. I think may want to send a communication directly, asking what is the plan on consumer safeguards and on filling the consumer safeguards position. Any other comments on anything that Alan and Maggie had to say? Susan Payne, can somebody, Mary will get you a mic.
Thank you, Susan Payne. I just wanted to make a quick point in response to what you just said then, Greg, about it being about stopping contracted parties making more money. I'm sure to some extent, they are all in business. That is what they're there for. But I think we should also recognize that actually many registries probably do intend to be very honorable in the way they operate. That doesn't necessarily mean that they want some contractual provision that can be enforced and has ultimately the risk of their registry being taken away from them. So I think we need to be at least understanding of where they're coming from when there's a resistance to more contractual restriction.
I think that's true, and I think it's good to distinguish between, as you say, the bad actors at the fringe and the better actors in the marketplace who are really more damaged or as damaged by bad actors at the fringe as are registrants, consumers, and intellectual property interests. So in a sense, we have common cause with the with those who are in registries, registrars who are feeling the the issues that come from fringe practices. And not to mention it ends up with them all being tarred with the same brush just because one, registry comes up with some outrageous scheme. People think that registries are all coming up with outrageous schemes. So I think it is, rather than trying to make it an us versus them attitude, it should be everyone who's invested in dealing in a responsible marketplace in dealing with the fringe actors.
Yeah, I thought it was a good session. I do plan to follow up with Alan and Maggie on the point about moving towards greater clarity on 318.1 and the other relevant provisions. I don't. It wasn't very complete. I mean, there's other issues as far as on this transparency side. I mean, Alan was saying, well, we don't make public anything when we close a file, which that's one thing, but for one, there's a question of what do you disclose to the complainant, not making it public necessarily. And secondly, what about when you do have a send a breach notice? So there are two breach notices now for violation of 318.1 in which the registrar did something, or at least they sent something to ICANN, and it just says, we got this on such a date and it was insufficient. Well, at some point, I don't, I'm not saying necessarily right now, it would be great to know what was insufficient. Or what did they get and why was it insufficient? I would think the registrar should want to know that. Just as we complainants want to know why what they did was sufficient when, as far as we know, they did nothing. So I think we need to get a little deeper on this transparency question with him.
Absolutely. Anyone else? Nick, are you? No, just. I think it's all good points. If there's nothing further on compliance, so obviously there are many issues. I guess one other thing I would say on compliance, the extent that we can bring to the list or maybe have somebody assemble compliance issues. I know that to varying degrees, different people in the IPC have more or less compliance issues, just depending upon the demands of their clients and the types of issues that they're pursuing. But it would be good to, as we try to speak as a constituency, try to collect concerns that we have about compliance and particular instances where we feel that there are deficiencies. Now maybe we'll think about what some sort of a secure collaborative space, perhaps, where we can collect those, although I realize it's always issues of confidentiality on our side as well. But of course, if we're talking about transparency, we have to some extent consider whether we can make transparent examples so that we can move forward. Just a thought about how to deal with that. So let's move on to Karen Lentz. And obviously, the first thing we need to do is to finish assembling our team that is going to respond to the massive and recently issued RPM review or GLT, the program review, which I know that some of us have read some of it. No, I don't know if anybody's read all of it. We certainly have to. I think it's even a long comment period of, I think it's 60 days, given the length. But we'll need any more specific thoughts on Karen's presentation or the issues it raised and any steps that we should be taking as a constituency. Nick, now you do have something.
I sat on the stage in London and spoke to the GAC with a selection of people from the Domain Name Association. And we had a little bit of a tiff before we went up there. because the couple of slides that I had were significantly different from those from the other groups who were registries, registrars, about the rights protection mechanisms. Because the feeling that was shared and that was presented that I differed from, because I said it was too soon, was that the rights protection measures were all proving an enormous success. So it's just an observation that in other parts of the room, and to some extent you can look at the data and what's going on, and you could say that actually infringement is not that significant at the moment. So I'm a little bit worried at the timing of this review.
Because you think it's too soon to... you can take positive results just because it's being taken before...
Well, only half of them are out the blocks.
Yes.
And the registration numbers aren't that high, et cetera, et cetera. So,
right, and as we can see walking around here, the big guns are coming, according to Radix Registry.
I mean, I'm not saying they're not a success, but it just seems... It feels a little bit premature to me.
I think that's... should well be part of our comments, and I guess the question is, what is the plan for the next review when there is a kind of a full marketplace and some of the big guns, more of the big guns are out there? Steve?
Yeah, I can't keep running into this problem of committing to do reviews, and then when it comes time, it's really too early to do a review. And I would distinguish two cases here. One is where somebody outside ICANN is dictating the pace. So the affirmation of commitments has some we have to have this CCT review. Actually, we should have already started it, and we've kind of sloughed that off for 6 months. But so ICANN would have to decide to go, you know, to the Commerce Department and say we want to put it off, I guess, which maybe they should do. The other is when there's not an external timeline that they have to follow, and it's really up to ICANN. But obviously, they're under enormous pressure from the would-be contracted parties to do it. I mean, if you know what Nick is saying is absolutely right, it probably makes more sense to have this review in 2018, and therefore not launch the new round until 2021. But I don't think that's a politically viable message within ICANN, so they're kind of stuck in that. You know, we should think about whether that's a position we want to take, because I think on the merits there's a lot to be said for that, but whether that's something we want to do or not, I don't know.
And it's definitely an issue that we should keep in mind and revisit. There are definitely various voices I've already heard around ICANN that have said, you know, similar things. We need to figure out whether we want to, you know, bolster that. Anything else on new GTLD program reviews? Jonathan Zuck, we'll get Jonathan a microphone, even though we can all hear him for the transcript. For the recording, we need that.
Yeah, we were focused on the rights protectionism, but what Steve said and what Nick said I think resonates more generally. The Who Is review is also something that's coming up before we're even close to finishing the implementation of the recommendations from the first one. And what I heard yesterday is that we are scheduled to have 8 reviews. Is that right, in the next fiscal year? I think it's like 8 reviews. So, I mean, the question's also going to be whether or not in this world of accountability and volunteer fatigue and things like that, if we ought to be, again, maybe together with other constituencies, because we've had this relatively unique honeymoon period across the various stakeholders inside ICANN around accountability. Maybe something that involves an adjustment about the reviews is something we ought to try and tackle in a wider audience as well. It certainly seems that starting the next Who Is review is a complete waste at this point, since we have no idea. We're still in the middle of PDP processes on several of the recommendations of the first one. So, I mean, I ask that as a specific one with respect to Who Is, but then more generally, with 8 reviews coming up, it's just a kind of a circus and of no real value, and maybe we ought to find a way to reach out to Commerce or look at the bylaws, et cetera, and actually, as a community, because I think staff are probably not in a position to say, let's push out these reviews, because they'll look like they're, you know, self-motivated for that, but really it's in the interest of the community to push out these reviews, and maybe we should get on top of this as a more general issue.
I think it's a good point, and I think that we... the alternative is to do the reviews and then do them again when it's a fully propagated set of new GTLDs, and that just he seems like a waste as well. So it's a very good point. Right, not bylaws. There's all sorts of reviews that are yes, and also goes to the volunteer burnout, you know, issue directly. You know, we'd have to all clone ourselves to do that. Heather.
Thanks, Greg. If it's helpful, Jonathan's quite right. This is Heather Forrest. The eight reviews are AOC reviews include review process improvements, who is to, SSR to, and then the competition, consumer choice, consumer trust, and then four organizational reviews, review framework improvements, GNSO, at large, and NOMCOM.
We'll just divide those equally among the entire membership of the IPC. I expect that'll take care of it. If there's nothing further on that topic, I'll move to the next section of the agenda, remarks by incoming IPC president and discussion, and then we'll go to Shari Falco to hear from ICM. My remarks are brief. I've already said in the closed session that it's, you know, an honor and a privilege to take the seat as the IPC president. This has been a robust and well-run organization. I'm looking forward to carrying on from, you know, the great base that predecessors and many of whom, you know, like the current rest of the leadership team have put me in charge of or given me a stewardship for. In particular, I thought it would be very important for us to recognize the incredible contributions of Christina Rosette, who was our fearless leader and who has just joined us. Christina, would you like to say a few words or just bask in the glory?
Give her a microphone.
There are a couple of microphones.
And it was kind of strange. it was actually very strange. You, you all are very, very kind. I very much appreciate it. I would question the characterization as incredible, but whatever. You know, we have had a phenomenal leadership team for all of the years that I was active in IPC. And frankly, without them, and in particular Steve Metallitz, things would not have gone as well as they did. I guess Greg and I are going to have a drink at some point this week, and I'm going to share with him the things the lessons that I've learned that hopefully you won't have to learn the hard way. But I would just really encourage everyone to really, really actively participate. It's becoming a really critical time within ICANN and the IPC generally. And it's really, as important as this work is and as much time as we all put into it, it's really important that folks participate. I feel like I'm preaching to the choir because anybody who's come all the way to Singapore is actually doing that. But again, thank you very much. I very much appreciated the opportunity. I learned a tremendous amount and more importantly made some really good friends. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina. We'll have to find a way to recognize your contribution in a more permanent fashion. But the glory and the standing ovation, you know, will have to suffice for the moment. Perhaps a butter sculpture will be something we can do in the future. any case, I'll ask Shari Falco from ICM to come up so we can hear more. Her slides are now loaded as well, so if you want. Mary is the primary computer.
What?
So I should just come up here in a moment and then.
Excellent. Sherry Falco, General Counsel with ICM Registry. So, first of all, thank you. I know this is a rather spontaneous moment that wasn't planned for in the agenda, but I just had been hearing some things and some concerns, and I had the opportunity to speak with some members of the IPC last week on a phone call. And I figured since we're here together in the same room, might as well just sort of address the concerns you might have directly. I'm happy to speak about some of the details of our launch plans. I think that's probably what the presentation focuses on, dates and timing and trademark protections that we've built in. I'm also happy to speak about the process. I think for the framing of the conversation, I assume everybody knows what the concerns are. At least my perception of the concerns are that initially for .porn, .sex, and .adult, we'd applied for a grandfathering clause, is how we referred to it in the application. And essentially what that was is everybody in the .XXX community, all stakeholders, both .XXX owners and Sunrise B trademark owners, would get a free sort of reservation in our new adult universe of porn, sex, and adult. And so we kind of assumed that that was going to be how we were going to roll out our launches. Interestingly, and probably rather bizarrely, along that way, the rights protection mechanisms were sort of clarified and solidified. So what that meant is, as you know, anything that was not part of the established rights protection mechanisms had to be asked for specifically under an approved launch program. So inside of that, our grandfathering plan would have been potentially characterized as earmarking, which we were not allowed to do, because our plan all along was to reserve these names until the individual or company wanted to activate them in our new TLDs. So theoretically, they would have been earmarked under that concept. And under the rights protection mechanisms, earmarking was a violation of that. So you had to kind of ask for special permission from ICANN under a qualified launch program to do something exceptional to the rights protection mechanisms. We were under the impression, because it was in our application, that it would be presumptively approved. It was, however, rejected. And at the time it was rejected, the reason we were given is because ICANN perceived it as a registry service. And so what they requested is that we apply, once we got our contract signed, for a registry service to offer this program. Simultaneously, we were engaged in a variety of conversations with registrars and our back-end registry, and we learned that the actual initial vision, where the names would be reserved and then able to be activated at some point, was no longer a possibility as a practical implementation. Registrars just weren't able to accommodate the notion that at some point they could activate and register these names. So that sort of, as an implementation level, wasn't a very practical scenario. So we had heard from ICANN at a policy level that they perceived it as a registry service. We had heard from registrars at an implementation level that it wasn't practical. And we had also heard from our back-end provider that there were costs. In .XXX, we didn't have any costs for reserving a name. But in the new TLDs, there were costs associated that we hadn't anticipated either. So it was sort of a perfect storm in that scenario. And there were many other sort of contexts occurring as well, which probably most of you know. But, you know, .XXX had kind of a long controversial history, particularly with ICANN. Litigation, several million dollars, several years. And I think there's sort of an institutional psychic concern that anything that's atypical to the ICANN process, so something like an RCEP for us, was a risk that it might delay our launches and or reopen the whole series of historical wounds that ICANN experienced on the .XXX launch. So there was a real resistance to going through an RCEP process for this under the fear that it would just be this Byzantine loop that would never really get us to launch, just from our own sort of institutional experience with ICANN on .XXX. So what we did try and do also is we had heard from registrars that there was no way to implement this plan at a practical level. So we asked ICANN if we could be our own registrar, so at least give consumers and trademark owners an opportunity to have a pathway to turn these names on, register them if they wanted to. Unfortunately, that got rejected as well. So we didn't really have a way to fulfill our plan. Policy, implementation, and cost prohibited that. And like I mentioned, the psychic sort of institutional concern that it would be a never-ending legacy issue that would go for years and years and we'd never get our product to market. So those are kind of the reasons that we no longer are able to offer the grandfathering plan that we had initially thought to do. And instead, what we're going to do... can I turn these slides or you turn these slides? Okay, cool. So instead, what we decided to do is offer some priority registration phases. So this was kind of our next best opportunity, given the history that I've just described. We're doing TMCH first, obviously part of the requirements, and we're happy to do it. That's happening in 2 weeks, so we're literally launching porn and adult in 2 weeks. The moment has arrived. And the next phase we're doing is an XXX Sunrise B priority registration phase. So anybody who was a Sunrise B reservant in XXX has the next opportunity to register their names under the Sunrise B program in .porn and .adult. That's almost a month-long program in April. And then the next sort of third opportunity is for our non-Sunrise B folks, so the general pool of XXX registrants. They have the next priority registration period, and then obviously GA, so that's a standard GA. Next slide, please. So what we did do for trademark owners particularly is we partnered with the TMCH, and we're very happy and proud that they were really open to collaboration on this regard, and what they've offered to do, and uniquely offered to do for us, so far we're the only registry that has had this opportunity with them. They've agreed, instead of $150 to register a mark in the TMCH, they've dropped their wholesale price to $95. And that, so basically how it's going to work is if there's a trademark owner who hasn't yet registered in the TMCH, they can do so now, and if they register a .porn or .adult Sunrise, they'll get a $95 fee instead of the $150. That's a wholesale cost, so whatever registrars mark that up to. Obviously, none of the parties can be sort of dictating that, but at least we were able to sort of have them collaborate. They've also been very generous and offered to put agents in key registrars to really help registrars promote this program, because a lot of the big registrars initially weren't offering TMCH Sunrise. It was just too much of a headache. And so what the TMCH offered is, look, this is an important opportunity to reach trademark owners. We'll put our people in your offices and really help guide it through. I'm not sure if any registrars picked up on that offer yet, but that is something that they made available, which is great. And we are also, I think, at least from my awareness, the least expensive TMCH Sunrise. We're not doing any markup. There's no Sunrise fee that's additional to our standard registration. So from what I had heard, in any event, is we're actually the least expensive TMCH Sunrise. Next slide, please. And that's sort of just the procedure for folks to get that promotional price from the TMCH. Basically, it's a deal you do with the TMCH directly. It's not us. We're just happy to be able to collaborate with them in that regard. Next slide, please. So the Sunrise B is probably where you're most interested, I think, because that's the unique phase. And basically what we're able to do in this regard is it's not a reservation, it's a registration, and what we've designed is a promotional offer. So it's the 1 year registration will be for standard registration price. Again, there's no fee markups to participate, it's just standard registration. But what we have done is we're offering a 2 to 5 year registration at the same price, so essentially a 5 year registration for the price of a 2 year registration. And while it's not a block at all, it does sort of have a similar price point and concept to sort of the donuts DPML and that kind of 5 year term. And so that's something we're offering as well. And we realized, you know, some registrars aren't doing the TMCH Sunrise. So this allows our Sunrise B community to get in for registrars who are able to pick this up. I'm going to stop here. I'm happy to go through my whole slides, but some of it talks about XXX registration and that kind of thing, which I don't think is particularly applicable. And instead, if you have questions about our sort of process and the transparency that we've experienced with ICANN or any of that kind of stuff, we can kind of speak to some of those issues.
Thank you, Sherry. That's very helpful, and I think it's probably a good point to stop here because kind of is, you know, going to the issues that we you know, wanted to have the opportunity to discuss with you. Mark Trachtenberg. Yeah, we'll get you a mic. If Jonathan Zuck needs a mic, you need a mic.
Sure, I apologize if you already got back to us on this one. I don't know if you did. I had asked a question on that call we had with you with regards
about privacy. Yeah, I did. I sent an email in response. So I think your question was you had some clients or potential clients who were worried about whether or not they had to disclose their name and the who is, and would it be an opportunity or possibility for them to immediately get privacy the moment they register? And the answer is yes, definitely. So no one has to disclose that they've bought a porn adult registration at all. They can just, it's through the registrar, so they can absolutely get privacy the moment they sign up.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. So
it was a great question, too.
So it'll come in a plain brown wrapper then, right?
Yeah, sort of. Right. Like everything
just like
else
the old
should.
Days.
Right, exactly.
I have a question, which is, did you consider something like the DPML or the right side, or is it not really make sense because you don't have a big enough portfolio?
Yeah, I mean,
not that you should have a huge portfolio.
Yeah, I mean, I think the DPML actually was mirrored after our own Sunrise B program, right? So we didn't only consider it, we pioneered it, one would suggest. But we didn't want to do it for the new TLDs, because again, that would have, we didn't ask for that initially because we thought we were doing this grandfathering thing, so that wasn't in our initial application. So that would have been a registry service that we had to do, we think, an RCEP for. And again, that whole RCEP piece, as it relates to us uniquely, had some institutional sort of wounds that we were just scared that that would lead down some very long multi-year track that gets us to no launch again. So I think that was kind of.
Thanks. Any other questions from the floor or the dais, as it were? I don't know if this is a dais or if I'm pronouncing it well, but seeing no further questions for Shari, thank you very much for coming and visiting with us. It's very helpful, adding to your, you know, already having given us a number of answers, you know, to on the list and to earlier meetings. So thank you very much for coming and visiting with us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. And I'm here all week. So if you want to talk about anything, find me. I'm happy to speak about whatever concerns you might have. And also, we have an interesting tool that was on the slides. It was the last slide. It's a domain check tool. If you go to the very, very end, Mary, if you could do that for just a moment. I just want to, because I think it's a really great resource for trademark lawyers, IP lawyers. It's called a domain check tool. And it really allows you, it's a free service we're offering, it allows you to check what the status of your client's mark might be, and we also send a PDF report and an Excel sheet, so you can share that information amongst your client base and help them educate and make decisions around what phase they might be eligible for. Yeah, so that's the URL, the very last one. Yeah, that's perfect. That's the URL, and I sent some slides, these slides actually, so I'm happy if you feel comfortable, you can share that with the IPC. You can check that tool out. It's live now. And I think it's a real great resource for IP attorneys particularly. So thank you.
Thank you, Shari. So we're in the home stretch. I think that the last thing on our agenda at this point is review assignments, next meeting, and adjourn. I think in terms of the kind of IPC-CSG schedule for ICANN, I believe that is, this is more or less the end of it. If I'm incorrect, please let me know. I don't have my calendar up in front of me, so there may be something else that we're all supposed to be at together, but I don't believe there is. So we did have an issue on Wednesday, tomorrow, with regard to scheduling on the ICANN calendar, where we have I think it's at the 10:30 slot. Want to make sure that we have coverage of the GNSO working party and as well of the human rights session. So I don't know if we have any people who will put their hand up and say that they're going to go to one or the other of those sessions, or better yet, who was already planning to go to one or the other of those sessions. And everybody else who isn't in one of those other of those sessions should be in the Geo Names session backing up Heather clapping loudly whenever she says anything. But is anybody feeling like hitting the human rights? I know, Steve, you said you were going to get there for a piece of it, but you have a conflict. So if there is anybody else who would, it'd be great to know. And again, also the GNSO working party review. So put your hand up. Don't all put your hands up at once.
This is Steve. I will say that, I'm flashing green there. One of the slots that we thought we had to cover doesn't seem to exist. I mean, Jonathan volunteered to sit in on a meeting at 11:15. In fact, that meeting's not happening, so we don't have to cover that one. Right. But this 10:30 one is still an issue. The working group on working groups. I'm not sure what happened to it, but it's not there. So, but this 10:30 one, if we can get a GNSO, especially I'm thinking on the working party, because that's impacts directly on our GNSO review.
Well, if you're still consulting your calendars, you can just let us know on the list if you're going to attend that, and it would be good to get a report back afterwards as well. And it's entirely possible that Mike Rodenball will attend virtually, but I can ask him that directly, of course. But knowing the scheduling issues, I think it's always a challenge. So, other than that, I think we've identified a couple of items on which we need to follow up with regard to communications, and we will do so. Steve, I think you've got a couple of assignments, and Jonathan as well. It says next meeting. Actually, I'm not sure when our next meeting is scheduled for, and Steve, perhaps as our reservoir of all knowledge.
No, it's scheduled for it's probably a month from today. March 10th, at 11:30 Eastern Time, whatever that is in UTC. So that would be our
16:30.
Thank you. That would ordinarily be our next IPC call. So unless you hear otherwise, but you'll watch the list, you'll get the details. Thanks.
Just one last item, or second to last item. Jonathan also wants to speak. I wanted to welcome, although they may not be on our call, we have two new members who have made it through the non-objection period, Aaron Johnson from Lewis Rocha Roth Gerber, and from Jonathan Cohen's firm, Shapiro Cohen, Jackie Lynn Kraft, I believe her name is. I actually was able to remember that, so I'm very proud of myself. Halfway through an ICANN meeting to be able to remember the name of somebody, even my own name. Jonathan.
Yeah, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but maybe
please.
A show of hands could act as a plus one, but are you guys generally in agreement with the idea that we shouldn't be doing all of these reviews that are coming up in the next? I sort of said it and we sort of drifted out like waves into the ocean, and I just should we try to operate together with the other groups to try and slow that process down? Again, what the next step is, having mentioned, it just feels like an impending
tsunami.
Storm.
Yes, yeah. I guess, Steve, why don't you go?
Yeah, I think we should move ahead on this. Heather read out a list there. I'm not sure where you were taking that from, but maybe we can share that list with first with our colleagues in the CSG. And maybe with our colleagues in the non-commercial group, and see, see if there's common interest there in doing something to lessen the bandwidth load. I do think, as I said, that we may have to treat the AOC ones differently than the other ones, and there might be some that we don't want to see delayed, but. I think the point is well taken, and we should at least initiate that conversation, because I don't know that any of the other groups are having.
I think that's the approach, is to start the conversation and see if there is a groundswell. And, I'd break it up into three categories: reviews we have to have, like the AOC, reviews that may actually be timely and therefore shouldn't be delayed, and those that are just going to be essentially a waste of time or very incomplete and premature, and therefore should wait until there is enough data for it to be really meaningful for the whole process to take place. Absolutely. That'll be the first action item, and we can note that in the action items. And I thank Alex Deacon for taking notes and being our dutiful scribe. I'd like to note that Alex is the eight of clubs in the deck, if I haven't noted that already. And Luca Barbaro and I are also in the ICANN Wiki deck. So This is two honors in one ICANN for me, and I really couldn't be prouder about being in the ICANN Wiki deck of cards with my caricature. With that, it's 4:27. We may actually finish with 3 minutes early, which wouldn't be a bad thing. So I thank you all for attending. I thank the remote participants for attending, Michael Graham and perhaps others. And I wish you all a great rest of the ICANN meeting, and hopefully we'll have a chance to talk. I would like to say one last thing is I would like to talk to each of you about the IPC, about your thoughts about what's been good, what could be improved, our priorities for the future. You have my email address. You have my phone. I'm here. And please, don't hesitate. I'm all ears. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your ICANN meeting. Yeah.